Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 14, The Reply Brief. This week, Bob addressed Part 7 of the prosecutor's coverage on the case against Adnan. This week, we learned about the defense file, Adnan's religion, and Alonzo Sellers. I'm joined by Bob and Janet on this holiday episode of the Friday follow-up. We have a lot to discuss, but before we dive in, do we have any housekeeping?
I don't think so, other than just what you kind of reminded everybody that this is the holiday weekend. So for us, there will be no Sunday episode or Friday follow-up next week. We're taking the week off. So we'll be back December 30th for our next main episode. So in 1 week from Sunday, we'll be back. Other than that, I do want to circle back. We promised we were going to try to figure out if anywhere it said that the school called Hayes' family to say that her cousins weren't picked up at 3:30. One of our listeners, I think it was Colin, I'll look that up in a second here, but I believe it was Colin, did find. So what we were missing, we saw all the police reports and we saw Young Lee's trial testimony at the second trial. And this listener went back and looked at the first trial. And in the first trial, the one that ended in a mistrial, we did get our answer. Zach, do you want to read the highlighted portions of that?
It says, do you know about what time you received a phone call that Hay had not picked up your cousins? It says, the answer is around 3:30. And it said, what, if anything, happened next? Then after a while, I called my sister's workplace, her best friend, and I called the school, but I was unable to reach her. So, I mean, that's what we know now is around 3:30.
Yeah, and then the last line, too, because it gave some contact.
After a while, my mom was really worried and asked me to call the police.
Yep, so there it was. And it was Colin Shortland, that found that. Thank you so much, Colin. Yeah, and yeah, so that gives us some context. So not only, you know, what we're always looking for, as I say, is you're looking for experiences, not times. And I think we get a real good picture of what went on there, that at 3:30, the school called. In response to that, the family called Hayes' friends, and they called her work, and they were looking for her. And then eventually, mom got nervous enough that they called the police, which happened about 5 o'clock. So that time, the timing there seems to be spot on. So it was probably around 3:30 when they got that call. So the conversations we were having about, well, maybe they, you know, she didn't have to pick them up until 5 o'clock. Doesn't seem to be the case. Seems like the Campfield Early Learning Center was on alert by 3:30 and calling the house. So it was not normal for the cousins not to be picked up by then.
Well, there you go.
And one other thing that I want to touch on, and this is just, if any of you are interested in this, one listener had brought to my attention. So the whole conversation we had last week, the last couple of weeks, about Asia and the second letter, where we had mentioned, or I had mentioned, that, you know, the whole idea of this is beyond silly, because everything, all the mail that goes out of that jail is read and reviewed by the jail staff, and the prosecution has access to all of that, everything that goes out of there. Listener Emily found a podcast where we get a couple of experts that are talking about exactly this. Those two experts are Brett and Alice from the podcast, The Legal Briefs, the prosecutor's legal brief. In their episode 81, which was a recent episode, if you go to around the 31-minute mark, you'll hear Brett and Alice explaining how ridiculous it is to think that any mail that comes out of the jail would not be reviewed by the jail staff and read, and that the prosecution wouldn't have access to that. I believe the words they say is that all mail you send out of the jail, out of any jail, is read and reviewed and given the access to the prosecutors on that. So if you're looking for an expert on that, so you don't have to listen to me saying that that's the case, these two experts, Brett and Alice from the prosecutor's legal briefs, explained it quite well in episode 81 of their podcast at around the 31-minute mark.
I'm happy to hear some experts weigh in on that.
It is good. It was really good. Yep. And with that, Zach, what is this sarcasm is thick today. Get ready to have a little break here. We'll feel a little thick. Saucy.
I'm in a canoe and my oar just snapped as I try to navigate through the sarcasm. That's
I will say exactly what I told Bob when I came in here. And I said, damn it, that got me again. Because that's 100% how I felt. I go into all these episodes truthfully letting them pitch me why Adnan is guilty. And every episode they get me. And this one is no different. They got me again. They come up with this stuff that Adnan's brother, Ali, told us, all this stuff that he called Nisha at 3:30. So Adnan had to have called Nisha at 3:30.
Yeah.
And Ali says that Adnan's a good liar. He clearly is a good liar. He gets away with it. He's persuasive. He's all this stuff. And then he doesn't even have a brother named Ali. That's not even, that's, oh, it got me.
Yeah. And I do want to be clear. I give these two a real hard time for intentionally misleading people throughout this series. So I do want to make clear in this instance that I do not think that this was intentional. It, as I said in the episode, it was confusing. I mean, a little bit of background research could have helped this out a little bit. Although right now I'm prepping for part 13 for Patreon, and they bring this up because the interesting part about their later episodes is they were releasing those after I had already been releasing reply briefs. So they're talking about stuff that I brought up in the reply briefs without mentioning it in their later episodes. And they do it in part 13, mention this again, but instead of correcting what it actually was, which is Ali is the law clerk, not his brother, they say, apparently his brother's name's not Ali, it's Tanvir, but I guess he goes by Ali. So yeah, so that's how they corrected it, was he must then go by Ali. Good as it gets.
Okay.
They discuss the whole idea that Jay told a lot of people about this, which I find is interesting, because I feel like on the side of the idea that Adnan's not guilty and Jay is making this up is he told all these people different stories.
Right.
But they're kind of leaning on the other side of like, Jay told a lot of people this. All this information is out there. So Jay must be telling, you know, even though he's mixing up facts, he must be telling the truth.
Right. But then do they go through, I'm trying to remember from their episode. I remember my episode because I don't think I really got into that much because I've talked about it so many times.
You didn't.
Did they talk about in there who all of these people were?
In this particular episode, they talk about Taib and how Jay asked, or Adnan asked Jay for help the day before. But obviously all this comes out later and says he saw the body at a gas station this time.
And I'm trying to remember when that whole... The Taib conversation, I believe, is not even purported to be prior to Jay's arrest. That one was a later one.
Okay. I made a note about the Dion note because they talked about that a little bit.
So I had to look that up again when you brought it up before the show started. And it's just, all it is, the Dion note is a note that Adnan's attorney was writing where it says, the note says, it's completely, it's just, there's no context to it. It's literally his handwritten notes. It says, Dion Taylor, same car as Adnan. Two-door Accord, Adnan has four doors, basketball game that day. Dion saw him and commented, Adnan's car was making a funny noise, cooling wire loose, fix 1 to 2 weeks after.
What? What does that suggest?
Well, the guilty camp tries to, but from this article, or not article, this is actually a Reddit post where somebody I found where the note was listed out. You get a lot of context here because the poster here is explaining how, like, this note, like, you heard it. There's no context to it. The guilty argument becomes that Adnan was lying to his attorney, saying, because it went on further, and it says this happened at 3:30 p.m. in front of school front entrance to gym. That Adnan was lying to his attorney, saying that this is a thing that happened on that day, so he must be guilty. Yeah, I don't, no one knows what it actually, you heard, it's just notes. But the person points out here in this post that in Just Wondering If, which is the Reddit handle, they said they once again, this in their timeline, they're inserting their own bias and their own speculation and putting it in their big long timeline as fact. Well, it just so happens that Just Wondering If's timeline is the one Brett and Alice were using for their whole, like, that's what they have linked to on their site, the one that they're reading verbatim down there. So some of that stuff like this, where they come out and like, and they told, you know, there's the Dion note where Adnan's trying to create this thing. They literally just read that off of this person's Reddit post. But it's nothing from what I can't make anything out of that. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's something that, if he's looking to try to find an alibi.
There's nowhere that says like on this date in, like,
yeah,
on
nothing.
The date of Hayes' disappearance. There's nothing to put it into that context.
Oh, I think what they're trying to say is that this was Adnan trying to create an alibi for himself that we know is provably false because he didn't have the car that day. But they're trying to make it sound like it was an alibi. Like, look, he saw me with this car.
Yeah. And that's what this whole like post is about, is that person that created that timeline that they used as their script. They created this timeline a long time ago, by the way. That this timeline that the prosecutors used is their script, that they wrote that is exactly what you just said. But when you read the actual note, it's nonsense. It's just a random nonsense note in the middle of floor his attorney's you know, trying to figure things out at the beginning. Like there's no way anybody can say what that means, you know? So anyway, that was the Dion note. I thought, because you brought it up, and then I remember, like, oh, I remember hearing the episode, but I didn't really address it because it's not even something that, like, the state tried to.
I just found it interesting that they brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
A big point that you touched on that I'm still iffy on is the idea that Adnan lied on Serial. They bring it up pretty heavily that Adnan lied on Serial. He lied to us saying that he had never hung out with Hay after school because she had to get her cousins, which we know that they had met to have intercourse after school. Yeah. I don't know the audio clip. I don't know it verbatim. I believe that they say that he says that she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't go to Burger King. She wouldn't go to 7-Eleven. She wouldn't, you know, I mean, she wouldn't do any of this.
They added all that.
So none of that's in there.
What I thought I remembered him saying was, with respect specifically to, and again, it's been a minute since I listened, and by a minute, I mean years. But I feel like when being questioned about why the police would have a note in their records saying that Adnan said he wouldn't have asked for a ride, or saying that he would have asked for a ride or whatever, that he was like, I wouldn't have asked her for a ride, in the same way that he said that. And it could have meant that if they were like, did you ask her for a ride home? And they would be like, well, I wouldn't have asked her for a ride because she always has to pick up her cousin. Not, I wouldn't have asked her for a ride around the school on her way to pick up her cousin.
And that's, and I brought this up in other episodes. It's like, I think that a huge confusion with the ride situation is from, again, forget Adnan. Adnan could be the biggest liar in the world. Doesn't matter. Adnan could, he's the person accused. Or he's not the person we're going to for information. Let's go to Debbie Warren's statement to the police. Adnan got a ride from the front to the back of school from her almost every day, is what she said. Literally, quote, almost every day is when he would get a ride from her. And so, but then when people are talking about asking her for a ride, like, I think there's a thought of the ask for a ride is like to get a ride home as opposed to a ride around the school. Those are two very, very different things, you know. So I think that's part of it. But what was said on Serial, and I'm paraphrasing, because I was just reading the transcript and I listened to it when I made this episode originally. Essentially, another thing you have to realize is there are probably 100 hours of conversation between Sarah and Adnan. And this little clip we hear is she saying, well, they're saying you asked her that you wanted her to give you a ride. And his response is, no, that's not right. I wouldn't ask for a ride. She had to pick up her cousin after school. She would not give somebody a ride. She has to pick her cousin up after school. So that was where that little blurb came from. It's on Serial.
Okay.
And then they take the note in the defense file where it says that sometimes after school, before picking up her cousin, they would sneak away and go have sex at the Best Buy parking lot. They made it seem as though he said, no, I would never go to the Best Buy with her and have sex because she had to pick up her cousin. It was in the context of Sarah just saying, yeah.
What? No, that's no. Yeah, that absolutely was not
no.
the same.
No, and there's a world where it's somewhat fair to say, well, if he said that he wouldn't ask her for a ride because she wouldn't give anybody a ride because she had to pick up her cousin, but he did on some occasions go sneak off to Best Buy and have sex with her before she picked up her cousin, there's, you know, that it's dishonest, right? You know, him responding that way. And like I think I said in this episode too, like, again, it doesn't matter. I know I said in this episode, because the bigger point to me is, because what pissed me off about the first time I heard this episode is that they explain, when they're explaining this, he lied to you. You all were convinced by his charm that he's innocent. And that's what pissed me off is it's so infuriatingly insulting to suggest that anyone who thinks Adnan is innocent, it's because we were charmed by him in the 7 minutes of his voice we heard on Serial throughout the entire series. It has nothing to do with it. Like I said, I don't care. And this is not an Adnan thing. I've said this about every case. I don't care if the person is a liar. I don't care if they're a cheater. I don't care if they're a drug addict. I don't care if they're a thief. Is there evidence they killed the person you're saying they killed? That's what matters to me. So there's an argument that it was dishonest when he told Sarah that, but you also have to remember, we don't have the full context of that conversation. All we hear is pop into the middle of a conversation where it's like, well, they're saying you asked her for a ride. And he's like, no, I wouldn't ask her for a ride. She had to pick up her cousin. You know, we don't know the rest of the context from it. Ultimately, it doesn't really make a bit of difference to me as far as how the case goes. The way they presented it, I didn't care for at all, because they presented it, and it sounds like the way you took it is that he said, I would never go to the Best Buy and have sex with her because she had to pick up her cousin. And that's not what he said.
Yeah. And they allude to it in the episode. Again, I don't know what is said on Serial. I haven't listened to it, but they did mention, like, that it sounded like that he had mentioned that she wouldn't take anybody to, like I said, multiple other places. I don't know if that was actually said or if they made that up.
No, that was them going. He said, you know, she wouldn't give anybody a ride after school. She had, you know, or whatever he said, something like that, because she had to pick up her cousin and she had to do that every day, you know, so she didn't have time to do any of that. And so then that was, I can almost hear Brett saying it. I don't remember if it was Brett or Alice going, like, so she wouldn't give anybody a ride. She wouldn't go to Best Buy. She wouldn't go to Burger King. She wouldn't go to Seven. That was just them kind of expanding.
Okay.
But yeah, like, that's the whole thing, is the way they present it. It makes you feel like, kind of like they did with the Hayes Diary episode.
Yeah.
They say all this stuff, and the way they present it, they're not saying quote, right? Mm-hmm. But the way they present it, you feel like
they're reading directly from it.
Right. And when that's not the case.
Okay. I'm sure we'll get back into this, but just as my notes, the Alonzo Sellers stuff is really interesting to me. It's kind of crazy. The whole idea of him, you know, they push it on to the fact that he was cleared, so they just kind of move on from him.
Mm-hmm.
One of the parts that I think we discuss is they say he's cleared because his time card shows that he got off at work at 4 o'clock. And they seem to accept that pretty easily in the episode, but literally they're talking about him finding the body on the clock, which right. is something I caught regardless of how you feel. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I don't understand how you can clear somebody by saying, oh, their time card is punched in and they were here till 4 o'clock. But we know for a fact that he found the body
on the clock,
yeah. Which means he wasn't at work. So that was a big thing for me. The other thing that I can get into really quick is, they did a good job, and I truly believe this too, when they were talking about his indecent exposures and streaking, and they said that typically doesn't escalate, which I feel like that was true. That doesn't seem like a crime that would escalate past anything more than that. You know, it doesn't become a physical violence. It doesn't become anything like that. And then in your episode that they say, that you say that he had an incident where it did escalate with a woman in a car. So is that them just not researching well enough? Is that them being completely biased and not giving us that information?
It's kind of par for the course in the whole thing. Because again, it's interesting that right now when I'm working on their part 13 for Patreon, that they're circling back to some of the stuff. Because again, they're hearing, when they made their 13, they were hearing me talk about this stuff already. And so now they address it, but they're like, whatever, a little misdemeanor thing. But yeah, you can tell they've pulled his criminal record, right? Mm-hmm. When they're making this episode, where they're going on and on about how streaking doesn't escalate. Well, that may be statistically true, but right in front of them on that piece of paper, it shows that in his case, it did escalate. In the last couple of weeks, I've thought a lot about Sellers after my conversation with Robbie on Instagram a couple of weeks ago. And I still, personally, I'm in the camp. I think it's super weird. I think there's something more to him finding the body, but I personally, based on the information I have in front of me, I don't see him as a viable suspect in the murder. That being said, there's stuff in the case file that we have not seen, which is part of the reason why the conviction was overturned. There could be more to it, but I don't think he's a suspect.
I just have such a hard time with him. Like, I understand that you cannot put your thoughts and what you would do into a situation, but the idea that he is driving back to work, which is a short drive, has to stop to pee on this short drive, parks his vehicle, goes across the street, has to cross the street into the woods to urinate, doesn't go off to the same side as the vehicle, and goes 120 feet into the woods to urinate. Just every bit of that in my head doesn't make sense.
I agree. Sellers has always been this weird thing for me because I don't believe he found the body the way he says he found the body. I don't see, like I said, I don't see anything that necessarily makes him a suspect to me, but this whole, to quote Colleen Barnett, this doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. Sorry. I love all of my relatives who live in Texas. So please know that that is an accent coming with love, just not towards that particular person. Let's get into the questions because there's plenty to discuss there. So Shannon, we just talked about this, but Shannon did ask if we had more information about assaulting a woman in her car. It's the same question that we're just asking, like, how much information do we have about the circumstances about that? And I'm sure the implication, or at least the speculation, is like, is there something to that, because we know Hay to have been in a car on her way potentially to pick up her cousin.
There was a time when I looked into the assault of someone in a car for the details of it. I don't, right now, on the top of my head, they should. I don't remember those details. He didn't murder anybody in a car or anything, but he like got into somebody's car. We're going to be getting into this in part 13, so I won't get too much into it now. But there are so many problems to me with Alonzo Sellers or anybody just happening across Hay and abducting her in her car as a single person, you know, as one person doing this because you have her car to deal with, right? And unless the place she went after school was to the place where her car was found, which I don't think was true. I don't think that's the case. It's just there's all the, like, why bury the body if you don't have a known connection to there? Like, it doesn't fit behaviorally to me. You got to deal with the car, so you have to involve somebody else. That's a different story with someone with a known personal relationship. That's like, I'm in big trouble here. I need help. Because the thing is, in Adnan's story, he didn't need another person, right? Like he could have left her car right where it was and or just taken her car and dumped it and, you know, gotten a ride after it was all over with. I mean, there's a lot of different ways. You know, we get the story because of Jay, but there are circumstances where someone could need help to bring in somebody else. But I don't see someone like Alonzo Sellers abducting a girl, murdering her in her car, and then involving someone else to start moving cars around and doing all this stuff. There's no reason for them to hide the body if they're not connected. I don't know. I just have a lot of issues. I've tried six ways to Sunday to wrap my brain around him as a suspect. I acknowledge he could. I have no idea who did this. So it's certainly possible. I don't know everything's in the case file, but I just can't see it right.
And I feel like, unless I'm just completely making this up out of whole cloth, I feel like I have a memory of Colin and Susan and Rabia speculating that possibly he did hear something from someone and heard enough information that he kind of felt like he knew where to look or had a sort of a morbid curiosity or just, you know, was asked to go there. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a lot we don't know. I mean, there is. There's just so much we don't know surrounding him that if you start to try to come up with a theory, you realize how many different ways it could be that he would end up going to that place for that purpose.
And for those of you that watch the Instagram live, you know, Rabia was kicking around an idea of perhaps that he was, you know, given some of his proclivities, was maybe spending some time with the body, like maybe the body wasn't even buried when he came across it and then made multiple return trips back and was spending time with the body, and then he buried the body. And I don't know that. I mean, that's a lot of speculation, but that's another idea that Robbie was kicking around.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that from that conversation. I guess I don't know enough about any other crime that he committed that would suggest that he would want to, quote unquote, spend time with a corpse. Wanting to show your wiener in public does not, to me, in any way translate to I want to spend some. That's not a proclivity that I would. So if there's something more that I don't know, but that feels like a huge leap to me.
I think she said she had been working with some kind of behavioral analysis or a behavioral analyst that had suggested that those two behaviors could be connected. I don't know that.
Okay. I mean, I definitely remember Rabia was not saying, I came up with this idea. I know that. I'm just saying for that third party, I would want a lot more information to kind of understand how those things connect. Because that seems like an even bigger stretch to me than assaulting a person because you have anger issues or, you know, whatever you're going through. Daniel had a very similar reaction to you, Zach, just not really being able to understand how you would need to take yourself that deep into the woods for that exact reason. I would say whether or not he has, you know, enjoys streaking, just a lot of people kind of struggle with why there, why then to relieve yourself. Jesse says, in the same line as what we were talking about, just Jesse sort of puzzling through the differences, as you pointed out in the episode, the differences in the questions in the polygraphs that Sellers was given, trying to figure out what the impetus was for the different types of questions. Like, is there something the police knew that we don't know that would cause them to ask the types of questions that they did in the beginning, and then the choices they made for the change in the questions for the second round is another huge puzzle in this case.
Yeah, and all we can do is speculate on that. I mean, it seems to me, I personally think at this point, clearing Sellers was checking a box. They were, by this point, by the 24th, they were all in on Adnan at this point. There's no question. They had pulled his cell records. They were pulling the records. They were getting the names of the people attached to those records. They had the cell site locations. They were going after Adnan at this point. I've always thought the way they word these questions, like, well, let's just get him through, pass a polygraph so we can say we cleared him, and then we'll move on because we're at this point. And again, not in the official record, but I think it's very clear in the record that we have, they were already talking to Jay at this point. I think this is more indication, if I'm right about them just wanting to clear Sellers, that they were already talking to Jay at this point. I think they already knew they were going to close this case because they already had somebody on the hook that was willing to say that they helped bury the body. And so because of that, they were just checking off the boxes. Because they are, the questions are, you know, the way they're worded, all because they just ask, you know, do you know if she was run over by a car? Do you know if she was killed with a baseball bat? Do you know? They never say, do you know if she was strangled? They do say, do you know if she was choked, which is close. But it just seems like, to me, it just seems like they were crafted in a way that he could answer them. It reminded me when I read through it of years ago when I was applying for fire departments. One of the things you have to do, there's big psychological screening, there's physical agility screenings, and then a lot of places will do a polygraph or a voice stress analysis, but a lie detector test, quote unquote, one way or another. And I remember sitting and they do like a pre-interview. And I remember mine, we were just talking about in the pregame show that I was a bit of a goody two shoes when I was younger. And one of the questions was, have you ever taken any illegal drugs? And I was like, well, here's the thing. Like my mother-in-law gave me one time I had a toothache and she gave me some of her prescription ibuprofen that was not prescribed to me.
Oh,
and
my.
I don't know. And then the examiner's like, okay, all right, well, we can get around that. So what if I ask you? He changed the way I think he ended up asking. He's like, other than what we talked about, have you ever done any right. illegal drug?
Did he also tousle your hair and give you a lollipop when you were done?
Don't,
that's the cutest.
Don't think
cutest
I didn't feel like a real like, I'm glad I can answer no to this because I can get the job. But also, this is embarrassing that this is the thing that is sticking out to me. But it almost seems something like that where it's like, all right, well, how can we ask these questions where you can answer them now? Do I think that the police are like, oh, we have evidence. We know that Alonzo Sellers is our guy, but we're already framing this other guy. No, no. I think they're like, we know we can close this case. This guy's just kind of in the way. And what reinforced that notion to me is when the information came out when Adnan's conviction was vacated, and we found out they, in fact, did have other solid leads about Alonzo Sellers that they hid from the defense. So they were actively trying to hide anything that made it look like Alonzo Sellers would be a suspect, which then if you take that, couple that with the odd questions in the polygraph and the big change in the questions, it just seems like that was a way to check off that box. We did a polygraph. We cleared him.
Do we know what any of those leads are, or do we just know that there was leads?
So the problem is that everything was redacted, right? So they said there was two suspects. One of them, they had a note that said that this person had said that, literally said they were going to kill Hay. But through context, the internet kind of figured out those two suspects were Sellers and mm-hmm. Bilal, who we've heard talked a little bit on the podcast, which was the guy from Adnan's, from the mosque. And then one of them had a family member that lived where the car was. We know that was... If Alonzo Sellers, I think I mentioned in the episode, his brother's wife lived there in that neighborhood right where the car was found. And they said, you know, one of them had means, motive, and opportunity. So but everything's like redacted. It was like the judge saw it. We didn't see it. So it's hard to know what that was. But it was enough that the judge agreed to overturn the conviction based on it, which means the judge found it to be exculpatory and material, which means it would have had an effect on the trial had the defense seen it.
So there's meat there.
There's something there.
By the time we're at this particular reply brief, we have not gotten, you just mentioned Bilal. We dig deeper into that. Like if you're a Patreon member, you just heard more.
A little bit. I don't get into him too much because there's really nothing there. Like Bilal's connection to the case is Bilal is the one that helped Adnan get the phone. I believe Adnan bought the phone and Bilal put it on his account so that his parents wouldn't know that he had it. And Bilal was later found to have been molesting children. He was a dentist. He was like sedating them and molesting children. He's a bad guy for sure. But there's until the information came out in the when the conviction was vacated, we didn't, you know, there was no reason to suspect Bilal. But when the conviction was vacated, like I said, we don't know who was who and who they're talking about, who had means, motive, opportunity. And they said, you know, the other one had motive. I don't know what those things are, but I don't have any more to really dig into Bilal.
I feel like the most information I remember getting in this case about Bilala Zanrabia and Adnan's book. I feel like they dig into it pretty deeply because there is definitely question around those deeds, what he was being held responsible for, why he wasn't brought to testify, and how he disappeared.
Yeah, and if I remember that story correctly, what it was is Bilal was going to testify because he was at the mosque that night, and he was going to testify that Adnan was there, that he had a convert, whatever it was. And then he had gotten caught. If memory serves, it was something like he got caught like in a van with a young boy or something. It was a pretty terrible situation. He had very serious charges. And then all of a sudden, the charges were dropped. He disappeared, left the country, and didn't testify. And so I think the allegation there was something along the lines of basically the state put pressure on him saying, and this is all allegedly. It's just speculation, I think. I don't know how much. Maybe there's more evidence to it. Nothing that I know of, but that there was, that they were, we'll let you off on this and let this poor boy not get any justice for what you did to him if you go away and don't testify.
Yeah, I mean, even if none of what just happened within a year's time or whatever for Adnan and the conviction, like, it remains so disingenuous for people to be like, this is really a very simple case. It's just all right there. Come on. It's so clear. It's like, there are so many twists and turns. There is a reason, and it's not because Adnan is charming. There is a reason that so many people chomped down on this and were like, oh my God, there's so much here. Because just the Sellers and Bilal stuff, completely outside of what happened with the vacation of his conviction, is very strange. It seems to me uniquely strange that all of this is tied up in this case and poor Hay,
Yeah. And that's getting into like alternate suspects. When you get into just like the evidence against Adnan, it drives me crazy when people are like, oh, this is so simple. He's obviously guilty. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
There is so much to this. Like, it's amazing to me that they will laugh and joke and talk about how crazy conspiracy theory anyone is who thinks that a black man who deals drugs would create a false testimony for two cops who have been caught in this exact situation doing exactly that thing. That's insane to think that's the case. That's conspiratorial. What about Becky? Wrong day. Inez, wrong day. Debbie, wrong day. The guidance counselor's office note. I must have got it earlier that day. Track coach. Wrong day, wrong time.
Asia.
Asia, wrong day.
Right.
How many things do you have to believe? Like you want a conspiracy. How many the Nisha call can't be a butt dial. Even though you can prove without question, with just, as I said, cell records and MapQuest, it's impossible for that to have been the two of them together. Guilty or innocent, it's impossible. But no, butt dials don't happen. That's wrong. And oh, by the way, your star witness got every single detail absolutely wrong and tried 8 different times to tell a story that matched. Not one single time came up with a story that's possible. That's fine. And then they believe all that and then think, if you think these cops did exactly what they've done and been caught doing on 3 other occasions, you're the crazy one.
Yeah.
Nice little soapbox. Sorry.
Everything you just said is true. Like, the simplicity is in the fact that there's zero suggesting that he did it. The complexity and the thing that sucks everyone in is all of the stuff around that that is strange, underexplored, misrepresented. That's where all of the stuff comes unglued and you're like, oh God, I have to solve this puzzle because this doesn't make any sense. And the reason it doesn't make sense is because it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So there are definitely people wondering, again, because we've just touched on it and because it's been kind of in the zeitgeist, if we know if Bilal or Sellers' DNA was ever tested again, was anything we have run against those two people?
I don't believe so. No, I don't think we have either DNA, and I don't think it was run. No, none of the alternate suspects that have come up, Bilal, Sellers, Don, any of those people, none of their DNA has been compared to anything.
Okay. Joni is just still feeling really confused about the Ali memo and how he would know the things in the memo. And if the defense didn't have the state file, how would they know about the cell records and the Nisha call? So Joni's just feeling some confusion around like timeline and that memo and where all of that information would be pulled from that Ali would then be kind of summarizing it.
Yeah. So one thing I saw in that question, they said that how would the defense know about the call log? They were fighting to get the defense files or the prosecution files. That's not true. The state turned over that stuff in discovery. What they wouldn't turn over was who the informant was or Jay's statement. I think it was around August they finally told them, okay, it's Jay Wild. That's when this memo is written, right? So at this point, they have the cell phone records. They've been trying to analyze the cell phone records. They've been doing their own investigation. They have the police notes from them interviewing Nisha. They have all that stuff. And at this point, they also know that Jay is the co-conspirator. What they don't have is Jay's statement. So they have this pile of data, but they don't know what it all means. And they don't know what the state is alleging happened. Like, they know they're saying that Adnan killed Hay. They don't know when he supposedly did it. They don't know where he supposedly did it. They don't know anything about moving the car, about burying the body. They just have these, like, all these basic details. So just understand that. So they had a lot of information they were working with. They most certainly remember when the police had gone to, I believe when the police went to talk to Nisha, I think the defense investigator had already been there or went there afterward because they got the cell phone record. So they're trying to go down. They know from the arrest warrant that the cell phone records were the basis for them closing this case. So the defense at the same time is trying to go through the cell phone records and figure out what that could mean. I hope that answers that part of it.
So that's strange to me. As you said that, I think about this in real time. You say the defense had the cell phone records and they're going through the cell phone records, but they don't know that the co-conspirator is Jay Wiles and they don't know what his statement is. And I get they don't know what his statement is, but I feel like Adnan would have stepped up at some point and during that time period and said, well, Jay had my car, Jay had my phone.
I don't know if he realized it at that point.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So remember, it's 28 days when Hay's body was found, 6 weeks when Adnan was arrested. I don't know if he had pieced those things together or I have no idea. But by the point in time of this memo, they did know it was Jay. And so at that point, I think he said that like Jay had my phone card. And now that I'm thinking about this in real time, I think that probably did come up about Jay because they're like, I'm sure when they're going through the call records, they're like, there's this call to this Jen Pusateri. There's this call to this guy named Patrick. I'm sure that it did come up that Jay had the car at that point, but they don't know that Jay is the one claiming that he killed Hay. You know what I mean? So it's another one of those data points they have, but they don't know the significance of it. You know, so imagine for all they know. So Jay and Adnan are friends, acquaintances, whatever you want to call them. This is what I think a lot of people struggle doing, is trying to put themselves in the mindset of the thing they disagree with, right? So from the guilty camp, like they can't think, what would this be like if Adnan is innocent, right? And so what I look at is, if he's innocent, would he suspect that Jay is saying that he murdered? Because all they know, it's co-conspirator. They don't know that this person says they just helped bury the body. They don't know any of that. They just know there's a co-conspirator. Someone is saying they murdered Hay with you. And if you're like, well, I was with Jay at that time, you know, Jay had my phone, we did this, they're kind of tracking their time for what they did. I don't think that he would jump to, well, must be Jay saying that he killed. My guess is, and it's nothing but a guess, that he's thinking, again, in this world, Adnan's innocent. My guess would be he's thinking some other person is saying that he murdered Hay with me. They also don't know, do they think they happened right for school? Do they think it happened later that night after he wasn't with Jay? I assume they probably figured it happened later that night. I don't know. But getting back to the original question, as far as Ali saying that, you know, their comment is that Adnan's liar, I don't know. That could have come from talking to his brother, talking to his parents, talking to friends. I have no idea where that came from. Like I said, his brother could have said something along those lines or said something to lead Ali to think that. I don't know. And again, like, as I said in the episode, we don't have to wonder if Adnan's a good liar. He was a good liar. He lived as many people do at that age in those circumstances, kind of lived a double life. He was the mosque-going, good student, good guy, the way that his parents would want him to be a good guy in that world. But he's running around smoking weed and having sex in the Best Buy parking lot in his other world. So, you know, he was a good liar.
Rosalind and Dory, we're running a little low on time, so I'm going to try to do a little bit of summarizing here. But just, you know, questions around the sort of red fibers thing, which was kind of not super explored that I can remember in Serial or just in that there's, in the context of Jay, obviously we hear about these red gloves and then that sort of goes away. And then, you know, there's the red fiber stuff, whether or not it seems to match with anything. People are just still feeling kind of confused about, you know, what are those red fibers? And did we, it sounds like no one ever figured it out. And is it, does that mean that it's definitively not those gloves, et cetera?
There are no gloves. There's no gloves. Like, I mean, this, the state's theory, the state's argument would be, well, he must have thrown those away. But they never found a pair of red gloves that Adnan, no, they've never seen a picture of Adnan wearing red gloves. They'd never have a testimony of anybody but Jay saying they've ever seen Adnan wearing a pair of red gloves.
I thought I heard something at some point that Adnan had said he had red gloves or something.
No, what Adnan said was when he went, when they arrested him and they took him in for his interview, he said the cops kept saying to him, we know about the red gloves. We know about the red gloves. And so he had relayed that back to his attorney. He's like, they kept talking about these red gloves. And I think what one of the attorney's notes are like, well, how did Adnan know about the red gloves? And then he, his answer is in there. It's like, they kept saying to me, we know about the red gloves. That, okay. That's how, that was Adnan's connection to red gloves. There's no evidence at all. It doesn't mean it's not, you know, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence, but there is no evidence that Adnan has ever in his life owned a pair of red gloves. That, so that came, well, if you're in the conspiracy theory camp, right, that the police fed this story to Jay, it would go something like this. We have no evidence. We have red fibers in the grave. So, Jay, you need to tell me what was Adnan wearing that was red that could have left those fibers in the grave. From my understanding, when they compared them, the two red fibers didn't even match each other. Like, they didn't come off the same thing. I believe that's true. But, yeah, so it would be something like that. Essentially, they would lead them, lead them to Jay coming up with something to fit red fibers, and he came up with red gloves. In the weirdest way ever, in the 55-degree day, when Adnan's walking all the way across the parking lot after murdering Hay and going and making the phone call, he's walking back across the parking lot wearing his red winter gloves.
And that's when Jay says he sees the red gloves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
It's interesting, too, because, I mean, again, who knows? But there's a lot of ifs in what I'm about to say. But if the police did say that, and if they were trying to intimidate Adnan, and if they actually thought they were, you know, scaring him legitimately because they genuinely at that time believed all of the stuff that Jay was saying, whether or not it was made up for their benefit or not. I don't know. It's just interesting. Like, that suggests if, you know, that went down the way that we've heard that it did with what they said to Adnan, that they believed that there were red gloves. Like, at that time, they really were like, oh, thank God we have Jay. Like, he's the one who told us about those red gloves.
Yeah. So it's context clues like that are why that's how I think the interrogation went. I don't think the story was fed to him in a way that was using the red gloves for an example. Okay, you need to say he was wearing red gloves because we have a red fiber. I don't think that's what it was. I think the red gloves are the same thing they did with the cell phones, where it's like, oh, we got these red fibers on the body. He must have had something red on him. I mean, where would these red fibers come from? He was wearing red glove. Okay, yes. That's where it came from. Same thing with the cell phone towers. I don't think they said, so then say you went to Christie's. I think it was like, this tower location is showing that you guys were over in this part of town. What were you doing and who's over there? And he's like, oh, Christie's, my friend Christie's over there. We went to Christie's. That's right. We went to Christie's house. I think it was something like that. Whether or not Ritson, I think that, and I've said this in multiple episodes, that I think there was a time when Ritson McGillivray believed Jay. And then there was a time, I think, when they realized that this story is bullshit. But I think they either did or wanted to believe, okay, well, he's not telling us the whole truth. Adnan killed Hay. Like that part's right.
Right.
That part's right. He's not giving us the whole story here, because when they confront Adnan, they're going, we know about the red gloves. We know about the red gloves. They wouldn't say that to him because it's not like it's a recorded interview. Like, not something they're going to use later, right? They, of course, didn't record the interview. I don't think they would say that to him unless they thought, well, Jay said there was red gloves. There's probably red gloves. Right. Even though he didn't know where the car was, but that can be explained away for another reason, possibly because they moved it or whatever, whatever thing there was there. Because think about that, too. Like, imagine a world, again, if in this imaginary world where the police did move the car and the car wasn't where it was left, that might be a good reason why you don't ask him on the record where the car is, because you know it's not where it's supposed to be. And so they're certainly not surprised when Jay can't lead him to it because they know they moved it.
Kay says, I never realized that Hayden and Nan would hook up in the Best Buy parking lot between the time school ended and when she picked up her cousin. Feels like this raises the likelihood that she could have had time to meet up with someone on the day of her disappearance, too. Also, I've always wondered if Baltimore County pulled Hayes' pager records during the missing persons investigation. If they handed them over to the city, we can assume they were never ultimately shared with the defense. Any chance you can put in a FOIA request to Baltimore County for their full investigative report to make sure we have everything?
I believe that's been done, and they never... Here's the weird thing about Hayes' pager is it's talked about by a couple of people, but a listener on the Facebook page pointed us out. In the list of things they did to find Hay after the school called, what's not on the list is them paging Hay. So did her parents and brother not know she had a pager?
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Did she not have the pager anymore? I'm trying to remember back through who all said, because I think didn't Adnan say that he would like pager, then he would call time, and then she would call him back or call whatever so that the phone wouldn't ring or something like that. Like there's references to people saying that they paged Hay, but that was a good point, because like certainly at the very least they didn't know she had a pager. Just something interesting to
think
about.
Really, it's something from Undisclosed, too, where there was a comment about somewhere along the line, maybe Colin, someone on that show was like, did she get a page in the middle of the day? Or maybe someone said something about that. I don't know, because that's kind of a long shot for Colin to just go, well, maybe she got a page. So maybe there was some indicator that she did get a page in the middle of the day when something like that. Because everyone's like, if only we could know who paged her, what was in that page.
Yeah, I think that comes from...
They've changed everything.
I think that comes from, like, again, there's multiple people that say that she had a pager. And I think what Colin had said was maybe she got a... Because you have the statements from people around her that say that she was fine, she was in a good mood, everything was fine. And then I think, was it Debbie or... Somebody had said, like, then at lunch, she seemed very distracted and said she was just thinking about Don. And then I think in another version of it, she even said that she was, because I corrected myself in one of the episodes, because I was like, oh, I said that she seemed upset at lunch. And then I reread, I think you pointed out to me, Janet.
She was quiet and maybe distracted. Yeah.
Yeah. It just said that she was distracted. But then I read there was another statement, I think by the same person, I want to say Debbie, that did say that she was kind of upset. So I think what Colin, he said, I think of the way I remember it was him saying, like, what if she got a page or something during the school day? Like, and that's what changed her mood. And that's what, you know, when she said something came up and I have to go, I could give you a ride, but now I can't because something came up. Maybe she got a page. We would like.
Yeah, that is what Colin was saying. The something came up.
Yeah.
Is what. Yeah, that makes more sense than just randomly wondering if maybe. Yeah. More so even than her mood changing. It was the something came up comment that I believe. Yeah. That Colin had said, boy, that sure sounds like it could have been a page.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wouldn't give to know.
It's interesting that you brought it up about not knowing, too, because in this time period, I had a pager that I know my dad did not know I had.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was very conservative, and he was in that mindset of, like, only drug dealers need pagers. You don't need a pager. Right. So I definitely had a pager that my dad did not know of.
Yeah, and I had one that I know my parents knew about it, I think. But I'm trying to remember, like, how hard it was to set up an account to have one.
So my parents were divorced and my mother got it for me. But my dad and, like, that side of my family did not know.
Well, what I'm wondering about is does this open another door here somewhere? Or if it's like, well, if her parents didn't know about it, could she just get it herself? Or is there another adult that helped her get the pager? Like Bilal helped Adnan get the phone. I don't know. It's just something to think about.
But Meredith is saying in the chat right now, it makes zero sense that the police wouldn't pull her pager records if they really cared to find out what happened to her. I wonder if they hid the records from the defense. I mean, agreed. It's not like the police didn't know she had a pager.
Or did they, though?
Because they did. Well, I'm sure they did. Isn't there testimony that refers to Kay's pager?
I don't know.
Like, there's no interview. There's no record in any police interview with any of the... of the friends or anything, no one would have thought to say, oh, by the way, she had a pager. You guys should pull those records. Like,
so
no one said that? Why do we know she had a pager at all then?
I need to do some research on this, but here's a scenario. The county dealt with the family, got their information from the family for their investigations for the missing persons report. It appears if Lee's testimony is accurate, if Young's testimony is accurate, maybe the family didn't know she had a pager and therefore the county wouldn't know she had a pager. Then it becomes a homicide and then it goes over to the city And by the time the city, if you look at those interviews, when they interviewed Debbie, when they interviewed Becky, when they interviewed all those people, they interviewed all those people after Adnan was arrested. So they absolutely wouldn't go looking for bad evidence, right? So they already have Adnan arrested. They're not going to go, especially if they know that the case against him is all bullshit. The last thing they want to do is, and I mentioned in this episode, we talk about Stephanie in this episode, how Stephanie never testifies. Same thing. Why wouldn't Stephanie testify? Well, did Stephanie say something that they're like, uh-oh, like maybe Stephanie mentioned that, and speculating, maybe Stephanie mentioned Jay talking to the police before he was supposed to talk to the police or anything like that. They're not going to go look for bad evidence. So the county, if their source of information, as we know it to be, was the family, and the family didn't know she had a pager, and then the city, when they're investigating, they don't talk to any of the people that knew she had a pager until after Adnan was arrested, they're not going to look either.
Well, especially not if they have his cell records and it's not help. Oh, Nick, I just saw your comment. If they have the cell records and they see, well, we know Adnan didn't page Hay, so then it's like, that's not helpful.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and
that is bad evidence because you already know that Adnan didn't page her. So you're like, well, but God, that seems like an oversight, even for and no other reason than just crossing things off for the defense not to attack you over. You know what I mean? Like the Sellers thing is dangling out there. If you believe that, you know, they needed to just tie up that loose end, at least they tied up the loose end so that they could then say, well, no one can accuse us of not giving him a second polygraph. We gave it to him and he passed. No one can accuse us of not pulling her pager records.
But it's like Nick said in the chat, it was never going to help them. It could only hurt them because they had Adnan cell phone records. So they 100% knew that Adnan did not page Hay. So by pulling the pager records, the only information they can get out of that is that someone else paged Hay, which opens a door. It doesn't tie up a loose end. It makes it could only make their case worse. If they know for a fact Adnan did not contact her, then pulling those records can only either be neutral or make their case worse.
And there's nothing we've seen in any of the files that references the police's attempt to do that in any way, shape, or form. There's just no indicator that would happen. And the defense didn't ever, during the trial, no one said, why didn't you pull the pager records? Like, well, we've got you on the stand. Why didn't you pull the pager records? That seems like a big deal.
That's what I need to go back and check, because I don't know if that was brought up. Because what it looks like on paper is that it was an oversight. Like, these bumbling idiots, why wouldn't they pull her records? But again, if you're one of us crazy conspiracy theorists that thinks that Ritz and McGillivray by the end knew that Adnan was innocent and they knew the case was bullshit, then it wasn't an oversight at all. There was no way they were, because imagine they arrest Adnan and they do, and then all of a sudden you see numbers on that pager during school, right after school, that bring in a whole other suspect, but they've already got their case closed. And it's already pretty clear they don't give a shit if they get the right person. They just need to close their case. Forget this case. Look at the other cases they were caught in. They don't care. I mean, they literally had people telling them someone else did it, but they went with the person they told to say this person did it because they didn't care. It was easier for them to close the case with a direct witness pointing the finger than it was to do any actual police work. So,
God, that's so depressing.
I think it is more indication. I don't think they're dumb enough to have not pulled those records to get a clearer picture of it. I think they didn't pull the records because they said it's a no win for them. At best, it's neutral. At worst, it ruins their case or brings in a whole nother suspect that's going to give the defense something to fight about.
Oh, it's just incredibly depressing. Shannon says, this is just a general question. If the state were to retry Adnan, are they allowed to change all of their theories of the case? I'm re-listening to Undisclosed and just realized the prosecution said Adnan was driving Hay's car when she was killed. I know there are a million crazy things the state presented, but what?
Yeah. So if Adnan is retried, it starts from scratch. It's as though the first trial never happened. So they can completely, they would have to. First of all, I want to assure everyone.
They can never retry.
They could never, ever, ever retry never. Adnan. If the Supreme Court of Maryland upholds the conviction being overturned, Adnan will never be retried. First of all, I don't think you'll ever get Jay to testify again. Second of all, if Jay testified, he would be destroyed because all these things, think about like the timing, you know, all the stuff that I've done during the reply brief about like the timing and the cell records, that is all that stuff that the defense never attempted to do back in 2000. but they sure as hell would do it now. Like all of these things would just completely fall apart. The come get me call, all that stuff. So if they tried him again, they would have to come up with a completely different theory of the case, because the one that they put forward is easily provably false.
Brian says, do we have an approximate date for when the Maryland Supreme Court will issue its decision on Hayes Brothers' appeal?
No, you never do. I mean, it could be tomorrow. It could be 6 months from now. You just never know.
Well, in the meantime, we have another episode coming from you, but not next week.
I take it that was the last question?
Fair to say.
Is that you closing the show?
You didn't think that was smooth?
That was great. That's one of the best closings I've ever heard. With that, is Janet so elegant, and I mucked it up even worse.
I'm both elegant and eloquent.
Both of those things, all at the same time. As you put it, we want to thank you guys all for listening. This has been an interesting year going through all of this with the transition of cases and the missing person cases, and then into the reply brief. None of this was planned. Everything's been crazy. You know, the industry took a big hit early this spring, and so many of you guys stepped up and joined the Patreon and kept the show going. Like, we literally are still here doing this every week because of all of your support. We appreciate you guys so much. And so I just want to close out the year. Just want to thank all of you guys for everything you've done, whether that's you just tuning in and listening every week and helping us stay engaged, or if you're in our Patreon community donating and helping fund the show. All of you are helping fund the show. I want to thank all of you guys for your engagement and your support. I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday season, however you celebrate it. And if you don't celebrate it, then I just hope you have a good week. December 30th will be our next episode, the next main episode. So with all of that said, after Janet mucked it up and I mucked it up worse, that's a perfect way to end our, not quite our year, I guess it's coming on the 30th, but close enough. Thanks, everybody. We love you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth, Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.